Bracken Fences by Wolf Curtaloo. Chapter 10. Hoard Choices. It tane Beatrice, Shen and Bill with Babby Wren, something less than a fur month, to skirt back around the western edge of the Taklamakan. It wasn't as bad on the return journey. They already had all the safe conducts they needed and didn't need to spend weeks and months earning the siller to buy them. They made a brief visit to a lamasery far west of the wanderer's usual haunts in order for to send a message, and the Heed Lama warned Shen that the word had reached Dean there that the Chinese was looking for him. "But is the Lamas no our allies?" Beatrice speared at him when he told her and Bill. "Well, aye," he said, "but some of them could be turned. They're no all in lamaseries willingly. You see how young some of them is. Families draps boys off if they canna feed them. It's no oi them that can saddle tilt. Like that pubescent son of a gun that ran off with Derry," said Bill. "And the other way round," Beatrice minded him. "And the Heed Lamas can be intimidated," Shen gaed on. "Look at the Wythone poster spread. They didn't exactly contain it." The Heed Lama had seemed interested for Bai and Shen Zine, but Shen didn't mention that. He mused on the interview as he undressed that night. He'd better try to get a good night's sleep. The Lama had invited him to join them the next night, when it was a full moon, and they sat in meditation right through the night. He'd done it occasionally afore. The Lamas didn't bother the wanderers, but they like it to keep the door open, and it seemed as well to accept their invitations once in a while. The Heed Lama had noticed the rosette-induced blue of Shen's een. Shen had got into the habit of going around with his een open when they were in the north. It provided his alibi in case the brand on his arm was ever seen. The Heed Lama was the doctor in this place. He'd speared Shen to forgie his curiosity, and had he been on the rosette plantations? Shen shook his head. "It was something other with me." "But you've been in contact with raw rosette in some way." Shen told him that he'd been blinded by it as a bairn. Then he told the man about his senses and how they work it. It didn't seem any harm. The man was genuinely interested, but knew Shen's friendliness had gotten him an invitation to an all next sitting. He gaed barefoot up the stairs the next night. His only footwear was heavy bits, and he couldn't be bothered tacking them off and putting them on ilka time he gaed in or out of the meditation hall. Beatrice came along and off for the first couple of hours, Lee and Wren with Bill. Then when the meditators all raised for a bit of a donner around to stretch their legs, she gaed silently back to her bed. Nobody would speak on it. The second stretch was the hardest. Some of the monks begood to dover hour, and then the end of their number gaed round and tap at them with a leather thing they used for sparkling water. By the end of that session, though, the silence had a hypnotic effect. The incense and conal licht helped to cool you the mind into a profound stillness. When they raised for the second time to stretch, ilka man seemed to be inside his ain bubble, moving amongst the others, but no impinging. Shen was intensely aware of the stained flare under his bare feet. For the rest of his life, the feel of stain on his soles would remind him of that night and retain a power to calm him. It was as startling as a lewd noise when the Heed Lama approached Shen and waggled to him to come into his wee reception room. They both sat quiet for a while, cross-legged on the flare, afore the Heed Lama spake softly, shugling the stillness as little as possible. "You're a gey fortunate man," he said. "Ye hae the love o' a good woman. Ye hae a bonny bairn." Shen put his hands in Anjali and made the Heed Lama a wee boo. He wasna sure if he was allowed to break the noble silence of a meditation session and all. The monk smiled and nodded. "I've been watching ye in meditation," he said, "I speaking very soft. I've been deciding whether to speak to ye. Ye ken, as human beings, we all understand that our lives is transitory. This sets us apart for the beasts. That we ken we will dee. We hae to try to live our lives accordingly, using the time that we hae as human beings. 'Tis a wonderful thing to hae a human birth, to be human rather than a dumb brit." He paused as Shen bowed again, wondering what the man was leading up to. "We're all gone to dee," he replied. "Me, the Lamas, you. This needna mak' us sad. It is the nature of things. Unhappiness comes with fechting again the nature of things. Do ye see?" Shen nodded, his mind quiet and receptive. "This body," the man languidly raised a horn and indicated Shen, "this body is mortal. That is its nature. Do ye see?" Again Shen nodded. This body that belongs for this time to Shen the Wanderer has endured many things. It has endured being poisoned with raw rosette. This cause will he effect. Shen felt the man's words gathering meaning in his mind like a snowball slowly growing. Food does the mind deal with this reality, the monk speared. Food does the cell react to the news of its mortality. Shen tried for to speak. After the hours of silent meditation, it was difficult to form words and utter them, like trying to speak in a dream. Fu Lang, the words come out raggedly. Some years, the man said calmly. Your case is different from others, say it wouldn't be wise to make predictions. But Ginyu had been exposed to small amounts of our time, and your urine had gotten solid blue. I would ken it meant fatal damage to your liver. Your reward that the plantation owners drives the pair deals out against the Gablin. Maist of them doesn't last long, but e'en the yins that max it back to their families and as we'll look it after, they dinna leave muckle ayont their mid-40s. That's all I ken, and all I can tell ye. I wuss ye weel, Shen. Shen looked at him, I feeling incongruously calm, as gin he was waiting to see who it would feel when this slow-motion bluffert struck his heart. The Heedlama booed. Come back and finish the meditation, gin you feel able for it, he said. I think it would do you good. He raised and left. Shen sat, no thinking, hardly reacting to what he'd been told. When the bell went to recall the lamas, he raised mechanically and joined them in the hall. Through two mere lang sittings, he let the news sink in, and by the end of the night he had decided wordlessly what he had to do, beginning with keeping it completely secret to his cell. And Neist trying to get more information. He spent a lot of the following week in the library. He confided in the librarian to a certain extent, and the man gave through other medical books with him, digging out whatever he could find on liver function and damage. It didn't look good. Being in the library got him away for the others as well while he got over the first shock. He let Beatrice think he was a bit spaced out for the honest sitting, which he was. He joined the others in the evening after yet another day in the library. Beatrice was warming some brie for Ren over the wee fire. The adults observed monastic rules and only ate the yea meal a day. Beatrice poured Shen milky tea. The monks would be haying theirs up the stairs. "They know nothing interesting," Bill speared. "I think I've about exhausted it," Shen said. "Mostly religious teachings, well, I mean, it is a lamacy." But, he added, trying to soon lift out it, "I thought it better make use of the opportunity. There winna be only libraries where we're gone, as you keep minding me." Beatrice had a puckle reservations about going back with the old people tea, to which she cried the land of fairy, but she'd soon come round to seeing the prospect as he did. He'd lived the most of his life with the hope that there was a way back, to a world unspoiled, empty of folk, without borders, green, warm, and full game. But Bill was full of arguments again it. He stared it again new. "You didn't really want to gang back to nature, did you?" Bill speared. He turned to Beatrice. "Did you?" "Well, doesn't it obody, some level," she said. "The Aboriginal dream," he said, humphing. "You've seen the Australian film," she speared, kittering him. "The in about the return to the outback." He said of course he'd seen it, been made to watch the usual half dozen extracts, mair nor yins in the course of his education. He pointed out to her that it was just an attempt at return. There was nae gone back. They described the film to Shen. The short version for skills, stared it with the wee Japanese director Mishima, speaking stroke to camera, while lang, lean, almost naked Australian aborigines hung around ahint him, and just a puckle white faces as weel. The camera panned out to show the official banners announcing the inauguration of the Age of Reason, Year Yin. That hadna catched on, Bill said. Folk continued to cry at the 21st century. The recidivists had been gained 3 years to adjust, afore all religious institutions was shut down and buildings and assets rationalised. Adjust or gay. Mishima gaed with the last of the poor, pure-blooded Aborigines, as well as many others of Aborigine descent, and a puckle stray romantics, with a three-person camera crew and a string of camels, into the outback, into the Stone Age. There was a jubilant gathering at some place the Aborigines regarded it as sacred, an old man showing a couple of halflings foot to skin a rabbit, and a wee lass expounding the meaning of rock art, tens of thousands of years old. The first deserters started to drift back after 2 months. The camera crew lost it a year. Eventually, only the purebloods was left to tough it out. And Mishima. Typical that Mishima was the only buddy remembered by name for the whole episode, Bill pointed out. It was the worst possible time, the start of the hottest, driest decade in the Southern Hemisphere since records started. The monsoon failed in India sacks year to that 10, Beatrice Kent. The extracts for the end of the film, 3 years later, saw Mishima skeletal, but strangely serene, macking a dew trap, explaining that he'd been his lane for a week, nursing a swollen fit and waiting for his companions to return to him. Shen understood that serenity. Then the small bon, silent, expressionless, starving, around a campfire, daylight shots of folk getting up in yins and tways, silently walking away, without farewells, into the empty desert, till there was only two old men, and Mishima the trembling horn that held the camera. That was the end of the film. The story was that a technician was driving to an isolated weather station when an old man raised up out of the stour for Nentum. The driver stopped and the old man handed him a package, neatly addressed in Japanese. The old man refused any help and said only ye thing, there is no nature to go back to. The driver found him dead on the roadside on his way back. What did they expect to find after all? Bill demanded. Leaving off in writs and mocks and spending ilka nicht ganting at your friend's over a bonfire. No my idea o' life. The old people winna feel that way, said Beatrice. No, Bill agreed, and they winna be gone back till a desert, he conceded. But I just canna buy into this nostalgia for the primal ooze. The reply came to their message. Simply, come home. The wee bon get back onto the plane and be good to work their way eastward through the patchwork of Uyghur and Chinese territories. The Chinese bureaucracy hadn't bothered to leaflet the clackens. The peasant farmers kent the wanderers only as brigandiers in the nicht. Another 6 months saw them 100 miles east of the Lanrang Lamasery, where the wanderers had first taken Beatrice. But then they stalled. The east leg of their journey would tack them hee and deep into the Kunlun Shan. Shen reckoned they were a puckle wicks hour late to attempt it with a wee bairn. Bill looked at the skyscraping peens. I'm no sure my geography is up to this, he said, but Nathan I ken leads me to believe it's habitable atween here and Amdo. Oh, believe me, Shen said, we hear our very ain Shangri-La back there. They're only a couple of months of the year when access is halfway easy, but a fit young buddy can generally get in a route in with a sheep or a yak cough on their back. I've done it myself when I was a halfling, I wouldn't know. But the temperature extremes, said Bill, and in the altitude. Shen grinned. Ah, he said, that's the wonderful thing. We hear ain wee microclimate. It's a very deep cloak. It was a loch athin leaving memory, but there was an earthquake and it drained. There are het volcanic springs, and the sty sides traps the heat, so it's mair nor tolerable. And we hear our alliances with the wanderers and the lamasseries to get us onything we need. We're no isolated except as we went to be. But who did you fin it, and who could other folk no ken about it? He speared. The old people fund it with folly and game, and I suppose being a bit mair Phil Hardy nor the locals and gone doon there. Weel, weel, Bill said, shaking his head. There aye mair things in heaven and earth. I expect if you looked for a spy satellite, you'd just see some nomads' tents. Nobody mapped the hills to bet for the grun afore the border gave up, and I guess nobody ever well knew. They circulated round the Chinese clackens for a while, but there was no work to be had after the hares had been thrashed, and they soon exhausted the market for their wares. We'll hate a winter in Lanrang, Shen decided. If I canna trust the llamas there, I canna trust them nayhore. It's her main base outside hame. He racks doon and patted their dug. We'll hate a wee sparky a hint, he said. Could we no let the lamasery hame? Beatrice suggested. No, no, said Shen. The lamasseries never keeps dugs. Whiles travellers has them with him, of course, but the lamasseries doesna keep dugs theirselves. He no noticed. It's because the old people, dugs canna stone them. Say reluctantly, they sold the dug to a Chinese farmer who seemed a decent man and made their way to Lanrang. They discovered that they'd just missed a Skander, who'd been there for most of the year, leaving under monastic rules and devouring the library. He'd moved on to another lamasery further west just a couple of weeks afore. They didna get muckle other news of their comrades. The lamas tended no to speer at the wanderers. They did hear, however, that Derry Akin and her ex-lama, Tsultrum, had had a babby. Bill forgot his monastic hoose training and clocked the guest lama by the arm. Is the babby all right? He demanded. William, said the monk, please. Bill let the man gae. Is it, though? "Aye, of course," said the man. "Personally, I dinna approve." He squinted at Shen, but Shen ignored him. "But it's no the first, though I hinna heard anybody gone off wi' any of their females afore." Bill was livid. Shen put his cell between Bill and the llama, apologised, and swept Bill off. Shen sent word to the old people that they were at Lanrang for the winter, but nae message came back. That in itself was unremarkable. Nobody would waste the fleeing o' a do, supposing they had the richt do, just to say, "Got your note, we're haeing nice weather here." But as the weeks passed, Beatrice realised she'd half expected Raggle to come. At 10 wrong ye, 20 yin month, for a small place vast Alasa, where she left Pandit Varshini in a lamasery, to reach the town of Tian Shi High. In the mere populous parts of the sooth, she'd made good time, travelling her lane fae clachan to clachan, working her wae wast, carrying messages as she'd planned. When she'd to turn north onto the Xinjiang Highway, the clachans became sparser, and the opportunities to tack messages fewer. She bade languor in ilka place. At first she'd only the energy for licht in by work, but as she got acclimatised to the altitude, she attained whatever work she could get in the fields or mending roads. She travelled on whene'er she could find reliable companions for ilka leg of the journey. By the time she neared the southern side of the Kunlun Shan, it was hour late in the year to mak the crossing, so she spent the winter waitressing in Tian Shi Hai. In the spring, she o'erheard that a group of wool traders was gone into Xinjiang with a string of yaks. She approached them, feared that they might went to charge her for the privilege of travelling with them, and a war that her reserves wouldna stretch very far. But once again, the name of Guang Wu Bang served as her passport. One of the men had a cousin over the border. When he heard that she was peer to the old man's network, he was all eagerness to help her, in return for her tacking a message back to the RW on her return. It was a great deal in exchange for gay little, she thought, just to let family ken that all was weel, some news of births and deaths, a prayer for their well-being. She wrote down names and details, and mentioned other names that their folk might ken, for her book or for memory. She was like an old pal within the oor. Instead of turning away west with the main gate, the men was planning for to heed mair directly north on the old military road. It raised to 17,000 feet in places. They made Rongye spread out her pack, and they examined and passed judgment on all her graith. She tamed their advice and coughed a new pair of bits. Otherwise they were satisfied, in fact they were impressed, by her lightweight, high-tech gear. It was 4 weeks of the hardest walking she'd ever done. In many places there was nae evidence that there'd e'er been a road. The weather was foul, the wind like razor blades and the hail like gowf balls. Even the first after the first night in her wee tent pod, trying to get some warmth for the yaks, she abandoned all modesty and slept in the communal tent with the men, kenning fu weel what they were doing, currying up agin her when they thought she was sleeping. But at last they came sklidderin' doon through scree and glaur onto a dirt track that led, they telt her, to the westernmost o' a line o' lamasseries. They detoured out of the rainway till she was in sicht o' it. Then they left her, with money mindings of the messages she had to tack, and other names and family connections to be remembered in case she met folk o' theirs. The llamas welcomed her rather ill. They didna muckle like haeing lane women on the premises. When she speared at the guest llama about Beatrice, she felt a wall of suspicion coming doon. They hurried her away the next day to the next lamasery, where there was a clachan. She could stay there mair snodly, they telt her, and maybe get some work. At that place, she felt she was being deliberately detained. They let her bide in the lamasery and broke in a lassie for the clachan to chaperone her. The heed llama interviewed her a puckle times, making her repeat the details of her journey and trying to trap her into betraying a knowledge of Chinese. It was clear to Rongye that the llamas kent very weel where Beatrice was, but they kept her waiting and